Welcome to Share Talk, the only podcast where investors come first.
Hello and welcome to Share Talk. Today I'm joined by Dr. Gareth Cave, who is the founder at Farm to Farm, who is at Nottingham Trent University. How are you today, Dr. Gareth?
Thanks, Zach. And Zach, it's Gareth. Don't worry about the doctor. It's okay. I'm doing well. Been a busy couple of days, though, as you've seen in the media, obviously pushing things forward.
Yes, I think, I'm saying doctor largely on the basis that the science has been one of the things which has been the highlights of 2020. People are like going back to their O-levels and beyond to try and work out whether there's science and there isn't science. And I think that's key in terms of what you're doing at Farm to Farm with your antiviral face masks. Could you tell us, what the breakthrough is there?
So, yeah, I mean, I guess people have already heard a lot on the media already, but, it was the whole face mask, the whole PPE was a diversion for Farm to Farm and a diversion from me in terms of my active research in a response to actually help, the NHS and the key workers and in general, look at the pandemic. So we already had copper nanoparticles in our portfolio. We know how to make those, we know how to functionalize those, and we know how to make those into inks. We sell these copper nanoparticles into the agricultural industry, and we have them in different feeds, in animal feeds, for example. There was literature out there, and people were talking about the antiviral properties of copper. Now, I'm not a virologist by training. We've done a lot of work on antimicrobial and antipathogenic stuff, but it seemed a logical step for us to see whether or not our copper nanoparticle technology could actually be used to kill the coronavirus and COVID-19. So that was where we started. We got some money from Innovate UK, and so we got a 50K grant from the government to essentially just do proof of concept on this. But rather than just looking at the nanoparticles and how we could potentially use this technology, we specifically targeted the face mask area, and we specifically targeted the disposable, say, face masks, because that's what the NHS were using, and they were the ones that the NHS highlighted as being the major concern over contamination, and that's why they dispose of them. Delving a bit deeper into how these face masks are made and what how they're used, it's essentially there's one active membrane in the middle of these typical three-ply masks, which is a filter, and that filter is designed to eliminate any cells or viruses, etc., that could go through either in or out through that mask. But it was actually a conversation I had with my dentist right at the very beginning before the first lockdown, and she was noticing that people on the bus wearing these masks, and some of them were upside down and back to front. And she was also pointed out to me that these masks shouldn't really be worn for more than, 20 minutes, 2 hours at the max. But, we all saw people scrunching them up and putting them in the pockets. So then it came to the point, well, how do we get our copper, or how do we get our nanoparticles into these masks, and how can we potentially help people? So I worked with one of my colleagues at the university here, Professor Bob Stevens, and we'd done a previous project where we put nanoparticles onto eye masks for looking at treatment of dementia, and anyone who's interested can go away and look at the Innovate UK grant called Legend, which was a collaboration between a number of companies, including Farm to Farm and Nottingham Trent University. So as part of that process, we knew how to get the nanoparticles printed essentially onto a fabric type material and to get them to anneal to stick to that fabric so that they didn't just fall off in the process. So we went down that route for the Innovate grant. We already had the nanoparticles. As I say, we coated that material onto the fabric, and we sent that fabric off to the virology testing facilities down in London, and it came back with the positive result in the sense that it showed the antiviral activity. Not necessarily being content with that, I wanted to see whether or not we could increase or show whether or not this was active over a particular time period. And so we tested to the maximum time limit that testing facility had, which was 7 hours. And even after 7 hours, there was still, over 90% activity with respect to killing of the virus. Again, I didn't want to limit it to coronavirus, So we looked at influenza as well as part of that process. So then it became an opportunity then that we demonstrated that we had a textile, we had a fabric which had this antiviral properties to it. And so we needed to then look, well, what was the next step? The next step was to try and get this into a face mask material. So a lot of the doors were closed to the face mask manufacturers. And if you remember right, the very beginning of the pandemic, there was a huge call, if you like, from the government for PPE and people to switch manufacturing over to PPE. How that was governed, I'll not comment. But there was that demand and people were all hands to the pump, and that meant that a lot of doors were closed to us in terms of a new innovation. Even as an academic, I couldn't get into some of these testing facilities and couldn't certainly get hold of melt-blown plastic, which is the active filter in the face masks. So the decision then was to acquire our own face mask machine. This is with Inform to Form, and bring manufacturing back into the UK rather than having to rely on the Chinese. Again, if you remember the beginning of the pandemic, all the PPE that was supposed to come over to Europe got bought up by the Americans, and we were left with a shortfall there in terms of PPE available to our key workers. So for me, it was important to put the manufacturing back into the UK and help UK PLC in effect in doing that. So we worked then with a European face mask manufacturing company to actually design and build a face mask machine, which was different from the mass-produced Chinese ones that, having talked to people, you know, even today, never really worked or only worked for limited amounts of time. So we designed this machine so that it could produce 5 million masks a month as a proof of concept, and it would take the material that we were using and put it through there. It was also important then that we could print this nanotechnology at a decent rate. And so again, I then talked to some commercial printers who aren't in the PPE market, and talked to these commercial printers about how best to do this. So we designed the nanoparticles to be an ink, much the same as a printer would normally use. And, you know, now we're at the stage where we've got people who can produce meter-wide lengths of fabric at 100 meters per minute of our antiviral material on there. And so that meets the demand then, or starts to realize the demand for the actual need for that particular type of mask. So we secured then that deal with the European manufacturers of the face mask machine, bring that over to Nottingham, purely because that's where I am in Nottingham. I've got good contacts in Nottingham working with people like BioCity, which is essentially an incubator hub for small companies to get their projects off the ground. We could have taken a bigger facility somewhere else and then built our own clean room facility, but that would have delayed the process. So it took a lot of negotiating and personal favors from me calling in on to get the facility that we have in BioCity, but that is a clean room facility. And again, because it's my reputation on the line with respect to these masks, I wanted to produce them in a sterile environment. I didn't want them just coming out of a dusty warehouse. I wanted people to be able to put these masks on and know that they was the safest thing that they could use. So that's where we got to with the masks. And then obviously, demand has been huge for these, especially over the last couple of days even. So we brokered a deal with a German company, and the German company, I'll tell you who they are, they're called Vols, V-O-L-Z filters, and they're the company that were actually supplying us, and they're the company that agreed to supply Farm to Farm with the melt-blown plastic layer. So we purchased the material from them. Now, at the same time, these guys have got their own face mask manufacturing facilities. They were impressed with the antiviral properties of the new technology that we developed, and they wanted that technology themselves because they saw that, you know, me personally, I was a person with integrity who was, you know, wanted things to be done right and things to be done proper. So they offered their capacity within their machines over there, and they're not just making the normal, if you like, surgical mask that we've been talking about. They also make the C-shaped masks, the fold-around ones, and then the other ones which are often referred to as the duck-type masks. So that then opened up multiple doors, and this was only this weekend that deal was struck, and that was reported on Monday as well. So those guys are going to help us push things through. And then I've had calls off other face mask manufacturers recently as well, again, looking for this technology. And I think personally that, you know, if this, you know, well, we know that this material does kill the virus, and it's not just the coronavirus. We're looking at influenza, which, you know, still nobody's got a cure for the influenza virus. If we can get this material around the world, then I think we can make a real difference. And ultimately, that's what my job as a scientist is to make a difference. If I was interested in money, I wouldn't have gone into academia. I'd have gone down the city route the same as my brother.
Very well. I'm sure if I was interested in money, I probably wouldn't be interviewing you either. But I just wanted to go through a few issues here. Basically, you know, you've said, you know, you've given us a story, and that's I think you made it very clear. Point number one is, I suppose we have face coverings now. Is the, you know, you have to wear face coverings everywhere you go. It took, from my understanding, about 3 months from the pandemic starting in March to let's say June for the government to say you know, you have to, because I mean, presumably because there weren't enough face masks that you could buy on Amazon, they then said you have to wear a face covering, which basically means you could wear a sock on your face, and that's a face covering. Clearly, the whole farm to farm sort of the novel idea there is that you've found, or you've been able to construct a face mask which can actually guard against or block viral intrusion. So that's what you've done. Is that correct?
Yeah, I mean, the government, you know, as you say, I think you're right. I mean, it's speculation on our part, but I guess the government didn't want to tell everybody to wear face masks initially because they needed the supply chain to be there for their key workers.
They didn't have enough face masks, but once they had enough face coverings and you could make your own, then they said, yeah. Then they said you have to wear a face mask if you go on the bus or if you go into a shop.
Yeah.
But the point is with that, anything that most things until your invention would not block any virus.
That's true. I mean, the face coverings, you know, still help because you've got to remember that this is an airborne virus. And so if people cough and splutter, if you mechanically put any kind of material between you and the outside world, it will slow down that velocity, if you like, and the spread of that particular cough or sneeze. But as you say, with the material we've got, a face covering, and there are face coverings that are out there on the market that say that they have copper in there and that they can kill the virus. And that's, you know, I'm not knocking those products at all. But those face coverings don't have that filter layer in there to actually slow down the virus, in my opinion, long enough for it to actually to come into contact with that antiviral layer or that antiviral material to then kill that particular virus. Whereas having the filter in there, you then stop the virus in its tracks, and then having the antiviral layer in there, you kill the virus as well. You don't just wait for it to die on the surface of the material of the filter.
And is this something which is unique to farm, or is it the most easy to buy product at the moment?
I think certainly with respect to the way that we've designed it, so it's a 5-ply mask, so there are actually two filters. There are two of these melt-blown plastic filters in there, and one on either side of the antiviral layer. To my knowledge, and somebody, I'm quite happy to be corrected, but to my knowledge, that's the first one on the market, and certainly the only one on the market at a price point, which is, you know, £1 or less.
Right, and then the other point, which I suppose is maybe like providing the volatility in the share price, which you're attached to at the moment, if there was a vaccine that worked for COVID, would there still be a need for, or would it be sensible to still have a face mask, an antiviral face mask of the type that you're wearing, that you're producing at the moment?
Well, I'm sure you and your listeners are well traveled, and you've been to places in Asia, and it's not uncommon to see maybe even 10 or 5% of the population walking around with face masks. And they're there because when they get any kind of disease or, you know, infection, they have the courtesy to put one of those face coverings on to actually stop the spread of it. So I'm all of the opinion that this is the new norm. And we've got to remember back as well, it's only every 7-10 years at the most that there's a new mutation of the SARS virus. We've had swine flu, we've had bird flu, and now we're, you know, this is just another generation of that. These things occur over and over again. And I think that the only way to slow these down in the long term is to have the face coverings and have these face masks with the antiviral layer on there will obviously help slow down or even stop that from progressing the way that it did this year. So it should be a lesson learned to everybody in government.
And presumably for the next year or two, until everybody's been vaccinated or we have a vaccine which actually works, it would be sensible to have an antiviral face mask.
Absolutely, and we're not going to be able to vaccinate the whole of the world. You know, we're talking about here, we're in a very privileged position being in a developed country like the United Kingdom, where we are all hopeful. And, you know, I don't think it's unexpected that we will all get a vaccination at some point over the next couple of years. But there is developing countries that are still, you know, suffering from Ebola, for example, that need these masks. And you remember, you've got a change in presidents over in the US and the new president coming in. President-elect has already stated that he's going to make it compulsory that everybody has to wear face masks out in public. You know, the biggest problem that any of us are going to have now is how do we get those masks to the people that need them?
And on that note, I mean, how much capacity do you have to produce face masks, and, you know, what scalability do you have?
So I'd say the current machine over in Farm to Farm is 5 million a month. The guys over in Germany have asked me not to divulge that information, but we're, as I said earlier, we're working on some other deals with some other companies to bring this forward and push it around the world.
Dr. Gareth Cave from Farm to Farm, thank you very much indeed.
No worries. You have a good day. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening. Remember to visit our website for more news and other podcasts at www.share-talk.com.